All right, welcome to the class. My name is Larry Martin. I am from North Carolina, and for the past number of years, I have been a circus ringleader at our school. One time at a school board meeting, the school board asked me, they said, "Do you like teaching in school?" And I said, "Yes." "And what is one thing you like about teaching in school?" And I said, "Well, one of the things I love the most about teaching in school is it's a free education program to train children. You get to learn how to be the best parent ever, and you don't have to pay. In fact, they pay you a little bit to do this. You get to practice on their children, and they don't mind. In fact, they compliment you, and you get free frappes and all kinds of good stuff brought into you. And at the end of your teaching career, they look back on you with fond memories of Mr. Larry. And really, you just were practicing on them. And they thought that there was a nice way to look at teaching in school. Kind of glossed over a lot of the problems. It's what this class is going to deal with to some degree. Teaching school is not easy. This title was sort of loose-ended. Disorder or discipline. I don't know why you came to this class. Did you come because you wanted to find out how to teach people with learning disabilities? Disorders, right? Do you come here because you want to learn how to be disciplined? If that's the case, you're not going to learn very much from me. I decided to take this class in a direction that might be different than what you expected. I decided to take it. I'm going to read you a mission statement. I always feel like it helps you focus. At the beginning of the year, teacher, sit down and write a mission statement for that year. Something. Choose maybe one thing you want to really concentrate on. And do your best at that. So my mission statement for this class was to discover the need for order and discipline in a classroom and inspire you all to confidently lead out in making a safe, secure educational atmosphere that those who come to your classroom seeking security will blossom and grow. It's kind of a long, windy one, and I won't read it again. Basically, I want you all as teachers to feel confident about stepping into your classroom this coming year. And especially those of you that taught for 1 year, and you know kind of what you're going back to, the issues haven't gone away. In fact, sometimes over summertime, they kind of mold and rot, and they kind of are fumigating. You get back into the classroom, and it was worse than when you left it. Sometimes they do fix themselves. Sometimes students grow up and realize that the fights they did last year weren't worth fighting about again the coming year. And that's always a blessing. So I'm going to take the class a little bit in this direction. You in your own classroom, and you might could tell a little bit of that by looking at your handout. The questions on there don't really deal with learning disabilities, learning disorders. There's so many of them. I want to say a little bit about that at the beginning of this. There's probably one of what I think is one of the most sad discrepancies about people with learning disorders. And that is that someone with a learning disorder is incapable of acting in a way that is normal. Let me give you a little example. Let's take someone with Down syndrome, for example. There's a lot of people that if you try to punish or discipline someone with a learning disorder, say like Down syndrome, you're then labeled as a harsh, cruel individual and someone who has no love in your heart for this person. Did you know the inverse is actually true? That if you don't love a child enough to discipline them, then you obviously hate them? I don't know of any Christian, God-fearing teacher or parent or minister that enjoyed discipline. It hurt them. It hurt the other person. And people that have a learning disorder or learning disability can learn to be kind. They can learn to have the fruit of the Spirit in their life, even if they aren't able to understand what being a Christian is all about. I wrote down a few things that I want to say about learning disorders or learning difficulties and let it lay with that. Tomorrow there's another class on distracted people. And we'll actually get a little bit into that in that class. Because I think sometimes people act distracted when they actually don't know what's going on because they can't sync with their reality around them. Maybe they have a disorder, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But for what it's worth, if you see a child in your setting, in your responsibility, that is treating another child in a way that hurts them, disrespects private property, or makes them feel worthless, no matter if the child is disordered or disabled or whatever they are, you must take action. You must. It's not necessarily like every child is your responsibility. Please don't go to church and try to correct everyone's children. That's not what I'm saying. But if you tolerate that kind of thing, they're just like any other normal child in that what's tolerated is what's taught. And they will just grow in that the more you let them. So those of you with special needs children, don't forget that. They can be taught to love. They can be taught to write notes to people if they can learn to write. They can always be taught to give a hug if they're able to move their arms. That's amazing. Oftentimes they can do things that we are incapable of. All right. Also, in relating to disciplining disabled children, remember Jesus' radical words? Someone tell me, what was Jesus' judgment on someone who offended a child? Anyone? I almost brought a millstone, but the plane wouldn't allow it. Okay, no. But you all, if you've ever seen a millstone, we were in Guatemala, and we went to a big coffee plantation, and on the side of the wall, there was a wheel about this tall, and it was about this thick, and it had a hole about this big in the middle. And it was their millstone for grinding coffee. They grind coffee by the huge bags, and it was worn out. It was smooth. Instead of having little grooves on the bottom, it was worn out. So in order to do anything with it, they would have had to re-groove it. And it was better just to get a new wheel. But they leaned it up there, and I told the rest of our group, I said, do you realize that Jesus' radical command was that that thing gets tied around your neck and you pitched overboard if you have someone that is incapable of protecting themselves and you just use your authority, use your power to hurt them? It's so serious. Not even an Olympic swimmer could handle that. He would die. So keep that in mind. And also, the greater you feel like your challenge is, teachers, no matter who you are, the greater you feel like your challenge is at school, the greater the need to have prayer every day. Pray for this child. I think sometimes we get so locked into whatever we think. We think this, I can't teach them, I'm lost, I'm sick of trying. Well, pray. It's easy to do, and it's easy to forget. So pray. I just wanted to make certain I said that. Okay. Now, into what I actually wanted to talk about. How to make your classroom, the description, had something about atmosphere. And my burden for this is sometimes, so I love visiting schools. I love visiting. How many of you visit schools during the school year as a policy? You and your co-teachers go visit schools. Whoa, okay. Not all of you can do this because you're not in close proximity to other schools. If you can't, beg your school board to let you have a day or two off. Go visit another school with the intent of watching the teachers. And your picture of school life will be blessed. I'm sure it will. It was a tremendous blessing for me. I love going to other schools. And sometimes the atmosphere when you step in the door is quite interesting. Some classrooms seem to have very little order. Some have so much order that you wonder if they ever have outburst. It's just quiet in there. Little angels raise their hands, talk in a quiet, subdued voice. The teacher walks around and answers questions in a whisper. Nothing is ever really loud! It never is. And I wanted to do that because I intentionally can have brought my voice way down. Do you feel the shock of what surprising you does? It's not comfortable to have a room that the atmosphere is too tense, too quiet, or too loud. It's comfortable when you know that the teacher is at home in his classroom or her classroom. When the teacher is at home and the students love coming to school. And when they come to school and they sit in their desk, they don't think. this is another day in the torture chamber. If they can think this is another opportunity, another day. And I love being here at school. Let me tell you a little story. I remember my first year of teaching school, I was so scared. I was pretty young. I think it was 18 years old. I was really scared that my students wouldn't like me. How many of you that taught school can recognize the feeling of being scared your students wouldn't like you? Praise the Lord. It's a really common feeling for first, even second, even third year teachers. I actually was probably scared about it all the way up till I was ready to admit that I would never escape this problem. And it's human nature. We want people to accept us, to appreciate us. I remember at the very beginning of the school year, I told my students, I said, I'm going to have three rules this year. It was third graders, by the way. Cute little things. Third graders, I said, three rules, and I want you all to be able to quote these rules at any time. So we're going to have random drill times. The three rules are going to be no lying, no cheating, and no bullying, or no being mean. I reduced the word to being mean. Those are my three rules. And after that, we'll have procedures. I want you to line up at the door for recess. I want you to have no talking when we're inside. And the rules cannot be broken without a punishment. The procedures, depending on how new they are, depending on your attitude, if you break one, that'll probably determine the punishment. Does it make sense? All little third graders, eighth graders, yep, they understand. All right, we're ready for school. Well, do you all remember what my first rule was?
No lying.
Second rule?
No cheating.
Third rule?
No bullying.
No bullying or no being mean. So, week number two, week number three, somewhere in there, really soon into the year, I had this cute little boy and he had a terrible home situation. Very sad situation. And he had a lot of stress at home. He would come to school some days and you could see his eyes were all red-rimmed. He had been crying. It was a sad situation that he had to go through. But school was kind of his haven. His friends were there. They loved him. We played recess time. He loved learning. He's quite an intelligent little chap. And he couldn't say his R's. And my name is blessed with two R's. And so at that school, they, instead of saying Mr., they said brother, which is perfectly fine, but that also has two R's. And so his name for me was Brother Lily. And he was so infectious. He would come into school and he was all bubbly. Even if he was not having a good day, he was always happy. And Brother Lily, it was the day for our spelling test. I'm nervous about our spelling test. And I said, well, I'm sorry. I hope you do good. Did you study? I studied with my mom. Well, that's tremendous. Are you ready? You think you're ready? I guess. See, there's one word that's hard. And I said, what's the word that's hard? What do you have? The word garage doesn't do right. And I said, well, that's really sad. I can understand. I know words that don't do right for me either. So I tell you what. You try your best. Practice the word garage as many times as you want. And when it comes time for the spelling test, you give it your best shot. Well, the spelling test came time for it to come. The little boy wrote down his spelling words. Oh, I always had them practice their spelling test right before we actually gave them the test. So they'd write down their words and put away all their books, clear the test. We had a little bit of silence. Get ready for a test. Told them if any of them want to pray right then, that's their time to pray. And then we get ready for a test. And all right, they pull out their tablets and he's ready to write. Well, he got all the way down. I think it was number 15 or number 16, somewhere pretty far down the list. He was so excited. After I read the word garage, I could tell he was really excited. And I was, when I'd give a spelling test, I'd kind of walk around through the desk and I'd be looking at them, and just kind of double checking them. And I think they enjoyed it. So I didn't see what he actually did when I read off the word garage. And anyway, he raised his hand. So I said, I have a policy, you may not ask a question during the spelling test. Just period. The only way you can ask is at the very end. So if you miss a word, so if it'll lay it there, we'll come around to the end. So it doesn't distract. So I came around to the end and I said, yes, do you have a question? And he said, Brother Lily, I'm so happy. I said, what are you happy about? Well,
I know I got God right.
I said, how did you do it?
Well,
and he reached up and he pulled his eraser. And if you've ever seen those white polymer erasers with a little cardboard sleeve,
look here.
And he slid his sleeve back and he had the word garage written on his white eraser.
And I knew I wouldn't get it wrong.
And I stopped and I looked at him and he was so happy. What was wrong with that? Someone say.
He cheated.
He broke a rule. And you don't even know if he realized it. I didn't say anything at all. I just said, I'm sorry, but I think you're going to have to count that wrong. And I could see this look go across his face. Why? Like, this is unfair. I found a way to beat the system, and it worked, and I'm happy. And all of a sudden, he didn't question it. He put an X beside it, and we went along. And at recess time, I said, I want you to stay in at recess. So he did. He was there sitting at his desk, and I could tell he was thinking. He was kind of a slow speaker. So I went over to his desk, and I knelt down beside him, and I said, why do you think I wanted to keep you in? Do you have any idea? Not really. I said, well, it has to do with the word garage on your spelling test. What do you think it means if a student writes the word somewhere on their desk or on their eraser, somewhere where they can look at it when they're doing their test? What do you think that could be called?
He put his head in his hands and he said, probably cheating.
And I said, you are so right. That is cheating.
What do you do about cheating?
I knew what he was thinking.
I said, well, what was the rule at the beginning of school?
You would beat me?
I said, that was what I said, didn't I? So what do you... And I was scared. It was so new into school. I had never administered discipline to someone other than, I don't know, maybe a grandchild or... A grandchild, a niece or nephew. That'd be a slight exaggeration. Grandchild. Niece or nephew. And even the punishment that I gave one of them wasn't but so difficult. It was never like, drag them over. Lean them over. I didn't even know how to do this.
The school board had gone over a brief way to actually do this. And you know what that little boy said? It's probably the best thing that could have happened to me. I said, what do you think we should do?
You should probably beat me.
And I told him, I said, I think that's what we'll do. And so we did. And he cried, and I cried, and we prayed together after it was over. And I told him, I said, do you realize what you did?
Yep, I cheated.
And I said, it's more than that. You were honest. And if you would have lied to try to cover it up, it'd be way worse than if you made an honest mistake and you came clean with it.
Well, I did get it right.
I said, I know you did. And I'm actually proud of you for trying to think of a way, but try to think of ways other than cheating. Maybe you can memorize the word. Could you do that? So I went back to the classroom and he memorized the word and I had him write it down 3 times. And it was over. And the next day his little conscience was clean and he was just as happy as he was the day before. So what's the takeaway from that? What's the takeaway? What would have happened, teachers, what would have happened if I would have said, you know what? I can't spank. I can't do it. I've never done it. I'll get it wrong. You know what that little boy would have suffered from? Is a terribly dirty conscience. And you would have taught him right then and there, you would have taught him that having a dirty conscience is okay. Because you, as a teacher, are the authority that he knows. And if you coddle him rather than discipline him, he'll grow up to hate the Lord. And just recently I texted that little boy. He's now he is a teenager by a good bit. I texted him to invite him to my wedding. And he was so thrilled to say that he's going to try to come. And I don't know his complete situation. He still has sort of a sad home life. But he has a foundation
I didn't lay the whole thing. I was only one little piece in the whole puzzle. And that's really all that we teachers can be. On your paper that I gave you, on your paper, I want you to look at that first question. I want a lot of response from you all. I want a lot of response. We're going to actually have something to do with... Hang on a bit. Something to do with some cards that I have. Well, I'll be... Where did I put them? I'll look while we're talking. I have some cards up here that I want to have response from you all. Discipline and teaching children. Here's the cards. We're going to use these cards for something in a little bit. All right, let's answer this first question in class. I want three different answers. Not different necessarily, but I want three people to answer. Someone. I want someone who is a first-year teacher to give the first answer. Whose responsibility is it to see that your student is raised for the Lord? First-year teacher.
His parents.
Okay, parents. Someone that's taught for 2 to 3 years. Or you've taught 1 year. Sorry, I skipped that. You've taught for 1 year, so you're either a 1 or 2 year teacher. Anyone? Okay. So maybe you have a slightly different perspective. Maybe it's kind of a blend. Someone that's taught for more than, I'm going to say 4 years. So you've taught for 4 years. Okay. Very good answer. Thank you. I was so hoping that we would see a progression. Predominantly, it's who? Anyone can answer it. Predominantly, it is the parents' responsibility. Secondarily, it is kind of a blend of all three. Kind of a blend of all three. And thirdly, it's actually the parents who get to choose where that responsibility gets delegated to. Now, you could argue with me for a while and say, but if the parents submit themselves to the church, then the ministry gets to have a say in it. And the other members get to have a say. And maybe you're right. But at the end of the day, it's actually not the teacher's responsibility to make certain that this happens. It is their partial responsibility. We're only a piece in the puzzle. If you try to get yourself on the other side of the parents and say that you're going to train this child better than the parents, or the parents are wrong in a situation, it's not that you're necessarily wrong, it's that you're in a really dangerous place. And I would definitely recommend having support there with you. So I'm going to drop that question. I wish so much we could talk about that more because it's such a serious thing. But I remember I was in CLE teacher training, first or second year summer between school years, and I went through a workbook. And the workbook brought this out. And it shocked me because, you know, I was really possessive of my students. They're mine, and I want to do things with them. I want to teach them. When they go home to their parents, oh, it's okay. Their parents can do what they want, right? But it's my time when they're with me. And really, look at it maybe from God's perspective. We're all teaching children for His kingdom. So that has to be our primary focus. Now I want to go into this discipline issue a little bit more. You're either going to have a classroom that is disciplined or one that has disorder. And I can't tell you how to walk around your classroom and be the kind of teacher that has an atmosphere that's healthy. All I can do is give you some principles that I believe are tried and true methods, things that can't be ignored if you're going to be a successful teacher. The first one is this. Misbehavior must be addressed. Let me clarify what misbehavior is. Misbehavior is anything that is being done that you don't want done. Remember, what's tolerated is what's taught. If you allow it to happen, you obviously approve of it. Now, to some degree, the nitty-gritties of this, if you allow them to pick their nose, does that mean you want them to do that? No, you can remind them not to do that. But if you allow them to do it day in and day out without ever saying a word, they'll believe that it's okay with you because you never said anything about it. So misbehavior must be addressed. If you let it go once and it's really misbehavior, it'll come right back up again. So if a student, I wonder if they're doing this. Don't be quite so quick to pounce on them. It will come back up. But then that needs to follow right along with, you need to address the issue. Don't just let it go and push it off and push it off. Remember that little boy at the beginning of the class? If I would have not punished him, how his conscience would have been dirty, and how then I would be responsible for teaching him that a dirty conscience is okay. Deal with it once you have it in your hand. Secondly, honesty is always the best policy. That's between teachers, that's between students, that's between school board. Honesty is always the best policy. If I tell a lie, it takes another lie to cover up for the first one. And you see the progression, it just gets worse and worse. If a student doesn't admit to guilt, if they don't admit to saying, I know I did that, you as a teacher better be very certain that it happened. I like to say, you better have proof that it happened before you grab someone off the shelf and go over and discipline them. Remember, you as the authority are what they are later going to view God as, or any other authority in their life. When they're young, you're teaching them. And if you treat them unfairly, it'll be a huge pill to swallow, versus if another fellow student treats them unfairly, which is devastating as well, but it's so much more for a teacher to do that. So remember, unless you can prove that they did it, be cautious, be very cautious. And I would add in there, communicate with your fellow teachers. If you have any other teachers in the school, communicate with them and the school board. And the school board can give you direction about where to go from there. Parents is another, definitely a very, very good option. But I can't talk too much about that. I'm going to jump into this a little bit, and then we'll move to our cards. How many of you have ever taken what CLE calls their teacher training course? How many of you have ever taken that course? We have a fair number. Those of you that have never had the privilege, I actually think it's worthwhile. Jonathan Erb helped to write a second level. If you think you're too high and mighty to go take the first level, the second level you have to memorize a lot of the books, The Seven Laws of Teaching. So it's worthwhile to go. This thing was taught in there, and I have used this. I have often thought of this model. I forgot to write the number. There's basically four types of leadership in a general way of looking at it. I'm sure there's other models out here, but I love this one. Let's imagine that the models can be named neglectful, permissive. Did I misspell permissive? We'll get that later. Authoritarian, maybe that one too, and authoritative. If you are questioning, which one am I? You might not be the best one to answer that question. It might be your school board. It might be your fellow co-teachers. But do the challenge sometime. Here's the rules. A neglectful type of leadership or authority or a parent is very low in love, very low in discipline. I want you to stop for just a bit and try to imagine what a parent that is low, or any type of authority, low in love, they don't love you, they're low in discipline. They're not going to discipline you. You basically would grow up like a weed. No one would care about you. That's a neglectful type of parent. Or I'm going to use parents here because it's so easy to see this. The results of it are terrible. A neglectful set of parents are going to have children that kind of trained and raised themselves. Let's move to permissive. Permissive say, oh, I'm so high in love. But guess what? Oh, I'm so high in love, but I'm so low in discipline that I won't discipline you. I really love you, very high in love, but I can't stand to discipline you. Teachers, I'm going to say this is a very dangerous place to be. Very dangerous. You find yourself beginning to teach school and you say, but I want my students to love me. I don't want to discipline them. It might work for a little bit, but after a while it will turn against you and it will be awful. Your students won't love you. They'll see right through that facade. They'll see through that shroud you've built around yourself. It won't last. Let's move to authoritarian. Authoritarian is what I call the dictator.
They're high.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's terrible. I can't look at the next word while I write.
They're high in discipline, but they're low in love. They're there to strike the iron down. I heard one preacher say, do you ever envision God as a person, a big man with a big stick, and he's waiting, waiting, waiting. As soon as you make an impression, boom, he's going to hit you on the head. That's an authoritarian type of leadership. Little children are so scared. Remember two little boys I talked to from a different community, and I won't make any references. Two little boys, and I asked them, so what grades are you in? And rather than the jubilant, they're little boys, they should love school. Rather than the jubilant little answers, they, I'm in first grade, and his brother was in third grade. I said, do you like school? And I expected them to just, yes. Both of them shook their head. And I right away got really serious to get right down on their level. I said, why don't you like school? The older little boy said, our teacher is mean. You know, that's all that they know. Those little boys have no idea what an authoritarian is, but they know what they look like. Whether the teacher was really mean or not, I don't know. I didn't meet the teacher. But they felt that way. And teachers, be careful. Be very careful. The last one, authoritative. We definitely did spell this one wrong. Authoritative. This one is the one we should all try to be. This kind is my favorite kind of teacher. When you go into their classrooms, you can often sense that it's not perfect, as in there's definitely things that can always be worked on. There might be a squabble in that corner one time in the day. There might be a little hiccup over here. But you can tell the teacher loves all of the students. There's not a certain few that get more attention than others. You can tell that the students respect their teacher, and I love it when they admire their teacher. When you see, I love it when you can walk into a classroom and watch and look up on the board and see the teacher's handwriting and watch the student's handwriting, and they're kind of the same. I taught for a number of years and watched teachers go through some of the other classrooms in the school. And they would teach students there, and then they'd come up to my room. And you know what? Their handwriting would model their teachers if they liked their teacher. So amazing. Teachers, you have such an influence. When you follow that last model, the authoritative, the students will respect you, they will love you, and there will be times you come at odds with them. You will administer discipline. You will. Let me tell you another little... What time do we have to end? Is it 4 o'clock? We have to end at 4. No! Okay, all right, cards. We're going to move on to the cards here. All right, I'm so excited about this part. By the way, please don't forget, this is the ideal that I want all of you to press forward to. I don't care if you're beginning your school teaching career or if you think, I wonder if I'm close to the end. Because even after you're done being a teacher, they'll still remember you. And if you change from being this, they'll be really disappointed. Always model that. All right, the cards. I have a theory. I have a theory that there's a lot of wisdom that sits in a workshop like this, but never gets a chance to grow because there's one person up front blathering on and on and on. So we're going to take a little chance. We're going to have an open discussion. Here, we're going to move this aside. And I need three panelists to volunteer to sit on these three chairs. We're going to turn them around. I'll turn them around while we talk, okay? So we're going to turn these three chairs. I need three brethren. I thought about choosing a girl, but I won't put her up in that one. The girls will get off today. Tomorrow is your day. All right, so here's the move here. We need three brethren. And brethren, this is going to be your... I need a first-year teacher, a second-year teacher, and a third-year teacher. So someone... I don't want anyone that has not taught at all. I want someone that's taught just a little bit because of some of the things you'll need to know a little bit. It's okay. You can learn if you haven't taught. So is there someone that... Well, let me tell you what you'll do first, and then you might be more quick to volunteer. You won't really have to say anything if you don't want to. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you each a card. This means, no, I don't approve of that. This means, yes, I do approve of that. Simple. No? Yes. All right? What you're going to be required to do is I'm going to read off some examples of school life. I'm going to stop right before the teacher would make a judgment call.
discipline action, whatever. I'm going to stop right before that, and then I'm going to ask for a response from anybody. And I want you all to be free. For example, I'll give one, because I can see some blank looks. I can tell that it's sort of like an algebra class, and I just went over someone, and that's okay. All right, so here goes a scene. I'll just choose one at random because I want to use this one. I'll choose a scene like this. You are playing softball. Student slides into home plate. You see him get out. You call the student. Sorry, you're out.
I was not out. I know I made it there. I could feel him. I know it. Mr. Blake, I felt him hit me after my foot was on the plate.
Well, it is out. I called it out. You're never fair. Teacher, what are you going to do? Okay, so we'll stop right there. You get the picture? Those of you in the audience are going to have to give responses, and the three panelists are going to have to say, I did not agree with that, or I did agree with that. And you might disagree up here on this little front row here. But if then you're allowed to explain why. Either you did agree or you didn't agree. We're going to have to hurry. So do we have three volunteers, three fellows that would volunteer for this position? Okay, we've got one. You can come up and sit on your chair. I'm going to have to call on you. I think I know. You have name tags. Oh, yeah. Okay, so we've got one. We need a few more. Two more. All right, we've got another one. Thank you. We need one more. You're not required to say if you don't want to. You don't want to give any comments. Thank you, Chad. Come on up here. All right, we've got a three. All right, here is your card. Remember, this one is no. This one is no. This one is no. So please hold your cards down. We can't see. And I was so happy to see where Harold Gaines is sliding into class. I saved one for a very wide old teacher. We're going to give him one. And this is a trump card. That's a trump card. So if at any given point you do agree or don't agree with what was said, you're allowed to slide it up. But it's the trump card, so you can play it any time that you want. All right. Let me grab my little book. We're ready to begin. Please, audience, do give responses, even if you're, I don't even know what to say, as in, I never taught before. It's okay. I'll guarantee you this. You're going to face a lot of similar things like this. You may not face exactly this. All right. Here you go. You are in the first week of school. The former teacher allowed moderate whispering in the hallways and restrooms. You, though, have decided that you're going to have a procedure that when recess is called to an end and the students enter the school doors, no communication. This means no hand gestures. This means no whispering, no sign language, nothing. You ask the students, I just want you to go do your thing in the restroom, go do your thing to your desk, and get ready for the next class. Just be good students, okay? By the way, I'm pretty certain some of you are going to be there. Get ready. So, you're in the first week of school, and you come in from recess late because you're holding the door open and helping a little boy bandage his toe. I made that up right there. You come in, and you hear something coming from the restroom. It's the boys' restroom. So, you will have to imagine that you are the teacher in this case. Whether you made the rule or not, you are the teacher, okay? They were whispering. You could hear mutterings. You could hear gigglings. You heard some water splash. So you just walked in. And as soon as you got in there, silence. Everyone was doing, but there was water on the mirror. There was water on the floor. All right, what would you all do? Any responses? What would your actions be?
Ask for an explanation.
So you might would just say, hey, boys, what's going on? Sorry, girls, you wouldn't be able to really go into the boys' restroom. Imagine it's the girls' restroom for the practical purposes here. So great, we have a solution. Just ask for an explanation. All right, you all please, agree or disagree. All right, wonderful. So the reason I'm doing this, by the way, is to give those of you that have never taught before a slight preparation for what you're going to face. and some of the do's and don'ts. All right, so maybe you would ask for an explanation, and I'm going to speed this up, and I'm going to say the boys would just be perfectly quiet. You would say, what was going on? Maybe you would ask the girls, what was going on? Dead silence. What would you do next? Some other response to that. By the way, you all can give options too. You don't have to disagree or disagree. Okay? Okay? So maybe you'd pick out a student and say, so-and-so, what actually happened in here a little bit ago? All right? Agree or disagree? Wonderful. Trump card hasn't come out yet, so we'll move on. I'm going to just stop that discussion there. There's two things that I saw happening. The teacher didn't jump to conclusions and say, you two come with me. He saw water on their hands, or she saw water on their hands. No. The teacher gave them a chance, asked respectful questions, and then proceeded in a plan from there. We have really no idea. It's one of those stories where if you want to have the ending be this way, turn to page so-and-so. We can't really imagine what the rest of the story would be like. Move on to scene two. Scene two, a week after scene one, whatever happened there we don't know, you again come upon an obvious communication between students. This time you actually observed them, whether they were whispering or whether they were doing something. This time you actually observed it, but it happened when they didn't know you were watching. It happened when you know they were being sneaky. You went outside of the classroom, I have written here, you went outside the classroom to fill your coffee cup. Coffee's a blessing to me. You observed this happening, you came in and you saw them whispering. What would you do? Sit there 3 minutes, we've got to hurry. All right, anyone, what would you do? You obviously saw them whispering.
Was it the same students?
You had suspicions about the first two, but you never were able to punish them. We'll make that up right now. All right, so you had suspicions, but now it's the same two in question. But this time you did for sure see them whisper. All right? Anything? This was during, like, when you went out. You had everyone working and you went out and then you came back in. And you would take them outside of the classroom to, right there, you would say, just wait at recess time.
Oh, probably should be that right then. Probably intended there.
Okay, all right. I have purposely brought that in. Let's have you all answer real quick. What would you do? Would you approve or disapprove of having them say, I want to wait till recess time, or I want to talk to you at recess time? Would you approve or disapprove of that? Okay. Yeah, one of... Jay, would you like to say why?
Well, I mean, it all depends on the situation. I think it's going to be taken with them.
Okay.
How often it's occurred. And
it's true. The first time. Very true. Whether it's the first time or not. Is that specifically what you're referring to?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Did you have anything, Douglas?
I don't know, I agree with him. It kind of depends on the situation, but I think it's good to take care of it right away sometimes, too.
Okay.
Not make a big deal about it, but just instead of waiting.
Okay.
Don't put it aside.
It's a very good thought. I wish we had time to answer everyone. Does the Trump card have anything to say from the back?
Well, I would make a judgment on depending who the student is, I think, because some students need a little bit of suffering before their punishment. Those I would have wait till recess time. So that they think more seriously of what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
And give them some time to suffer. But others, I would rather just have their consciences cleared and get on with life and have them enjoy the rest of the period. So I would make a difference on who you.
Okay.
But I've experienced with them before.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I believe that. Did everyone hear what that answer was? I would think that was a very, very good answer. Our time is here to go on. I do want to read the one that I was most nervous about. And this time I'm not going to ask for a response from you all. I just want you to think about this one. You're having a problem with your students not being enthusiastic when you ask them to sing. You talk to the school board for input, but their answer is that this school has always had a problem with that, and that they were hoping you would have a good solution. What are you going to do? And the reason I think that's so important is because I believe that singing is so important to a joyous Christian life. Your students are going to someday grow up to probably be teachers. A good percentage of us are teachers right here. How will they be as Christians? And I gave you all a song, and we didn't have time to sing it. So please, if you come tomorrow, please bring it. And if you don't come, I'll have some more copies for whoever does come tomorrow. But I want to sing this song. My students and I really enjoyed singing this song as kind of a welcoming to the new week of the new day. That's where I'll stop with this. Thank you all for your attention, and you may be dismissed.